Our first item is draft advisory opinion 2024-09, request from U.S. Representative Nanette Barragan. We have Ms. Wenziger here from the Office of General Counsel, and I see a counsel for the requester, Ms. Olson, here to answer any questions that we might have. Let me turn it over to Mr. Wenziger for a presentation on this AO request.
Thank you, Chairman. Good morning, Commissioners. Before you are agenda documents 2437A and 2437B, draft advisory opinions responding to a request by Congresswoman Nanette Barragan and her principal campaign committee, Barragan for Congress. The requesters ask whether campaign funds may be used to pay certain elder care expenses incurred in a variety of scenarios by Congresswoman Barragan as the primary caretaker of her mother. Both drafts conclude that campaign funds may be used to pay certain elder care expenses Congresswoman Barragan incurs when traveling for her own campaign because the expenses would not exist irrespective of the campaign, and therefore the payment of the expenses with campaign funds would not be personal use. Draft A further concludes that campaign funds may be used to pay certain elder care expenses Congresswoman Barragan incurs in a variety of scenarios when she's away from home for activities directly connected to her duties as a federal office holder because the expenses would not exist irrespective of her duties as a federal office holder, and therefore the campaign's payment of those expenses would not be personal use. Draft B, on the other hand, concludes that campaign funds may not be used in those same scenarios because Congresswoman Barragan's obligation to ensure adequate elder care would exist irrespective of her duties as a federal office holder, and therefore the payment of such expenses with campaign funds would be personal use. So we received no comments on the request and one comment on the draft, and I'm happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you very much to the Office of General Counsel. Colleagues, let me open it up. There are questions for OGC or questions for counsel for the requester. Mr. Dickerson.
Thank you. I appreciate the requester being here. This is one of those many cases where I think at least my decision making will be very much helped by being able to ask those questions.
Oh, yeah, sorry, Commissioner Broussard?
No, I was just going to ask if my, thank you. It could bring it closer to the mic. It's a little difficult to hear. Thank you.
Sure, no problem at all. Thank you for interrupting so we could make that correction. So Commissioner Dickerson, back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is funny because my family usually thinks my voice is too loud. So this is an unusual problem for me. So I had some questions about the scope of the request. As I'm sure counsel knows, advisory opinions are for specific transactions or activities of a person. And so I just want to have some sort of comfort in terms of what the anticipated scope of the AO would be. So there's three buckets of activity that you asked about. I'm just going to skip to the end and say that number three strikes me as fine under our precedent, so I don't have questions on those. But the first two, I think, are a little tricky. So let me just read the first question presented, and then I'll try to break it down with you. So the question presented, number one, is may Congresswoman Barragan use campaign funds to pay for gaps in her mother's caregiving when Congresswoman Barragan is in her district or traveling to other destinations for campaign events, such as fundraising events, meetings with campaign supporters, traveling with presidential and other congressional candidates, or to the national convention, I assume, of her political party. So I guess my first question is, would you agree with me that under the statute, for these expenses not to be personal use, they must be either in connection with her campaign or in connection with her official duties as a member of Congress? And that,
yes.
That's an or. That's be one or the other bucket.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. So then let me ask you about each of these buckets. I think I understand what a fundraising event is, but to be clear, do you mean a fundraising event specifically for her reelection, or do you mean a broader category of fundraising events?
In that case, we are talking about her fundraising events, potentially joint fundraisers with her and someone else, but not fundraisers for purely for other campaigns.
If it were as a result of a joint fundraising committee, would you expect to allocate the expenses?
Yeah, although I don't think she has any joint fundraising committees at the moment. I kind of meant if they both Yes, if they did do a joint fundraising committee, I expect that the allocation for the contributions that came in would be done according to the commission's statutes and regulations. I haven't thought about if we did a joint fundraiser, if you'd attribute the child care costs to both, to everyone who was in there. I hadn't given that any thought, and nor is that something a congresswoman asked me to ask of you. I don't think that's anything she anticipates to be happening.
So then for purposes of today, and I understand that I've represented clients, I know things come up. So for purposes of today, can I interpret that as limited to her own campaign?
Yes.
Okay. The next category is meetings with campaign supporters. I assume you don't meet in the hypothetical where my best friend lives in New York and happens to support my campaign and we go out for dinner. So can you give me a limiting gloss on the context of meetings with campaign supporters?
Yes, we were trying to come up with a way of, you know, making it clear for the commission, and also making sure we're ensuring we knew what it covered once you gave us your advisory opinion. But there's those unique situations that come up for office holders all the time. Oh, you know, the supporters want you, you know, you have some supporters in, you know, San Diego, you know, and she can drive down from LA and they have a meeting about an issue, about a campaign thing, a fundraising event, just a get out the vote kind of thing where supporters are there. I recognize that it's a little bit vague, but I think it is not the scenario in which, you know, we fly off and meet our best friend in New York City. This would be, you know, official campaign events where we're meeting with people who give to her campaign, people who have supported in the past, people who knock on doors, volunteers, that sort of thing.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
So again, this would be limited to, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but activities directly connected to her own reelection campaign effort in her district.
Correct.
So that takes us to traveling with presidential or other congressional candidates. Back to that two bucket problem. I understand and appreciate that, or at least I think that you are trying to organize your questions in subsection one and subsection two to account for the for that distinction. What do you have in mind by traveling with other candidates?
You know, she's gotten opportunities to do campaign events or things for the party, where a bunch of officers get together to do some sort of events for, you know, president or, in this case, like the national parties, that sort of thing. We're trying to capture all things that might happen so that we feel like we're giving you all the information. Obviously we don't know all the opportunities that will come about. But obviously during an election year, there tends to be more opportunities for traveling to events or participating things with other candidates, right? Including, especially if it's a presidential election year.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Well, I mean, I think that gets to the heart of my kind of concern, which is opportunities for travel is a pretty broad bucket. And, you know, that raises two concerns, which I'm curious as to your reactions. You know, one concern is, the extent we're talking about opportunities for travel, that just may not be a specific enough activity or transaction to merit an advisory opinion under the statute. And the other is opportunities for travel may not be sufficiently connected to her own reelection campaign. I won't speak for my colleagues, but for me to feel comfortable providing the immunities of an advisory opinion. So to the extent that you've got a limiting gloss on that, I'd be curious to hear it, having, I think, shown my cards.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's tough to say exactly what, as I said before, what is going to happen. But there are a number of different types of opportunities that happen. And when the Congresswoman feels, when she gets to travel with other candidates or get on the national stage or go to a larger event that is not just a direct fundraiser for her in particular, that raises impacts her own campaign in terms of visibility, in terms of potential votes, in terms of potential contributors. And so while it may not be a campaign event For the Congresswoman, it is in connection with her campaign, understanding, you know, your point of view that you need to draw some lines in order for, you know, to get specific. I think that's what I've got.
Fair enough. Let me ask actually the harder question, which I may get at the same issue, which is attendance at the, I presume, Democratic National Convention. How is that in connection with her campaign, concretely?
I think in a number of ways. It means getting to meet at the national convention with supporters who are already her supporters, meeting new people, you know, being able to shake hands, potentially meeting new contributors, potentially meeting people who could come back to her district and assist her either on a campaign level or, you know, assist with fundraising. And it allows you to become part of and be involved in the party that, you know, you represent when you go to Congress.
Ms. Chairman?
Yes.
And then I'll step aside. I see my colleague has some questions. I think we're back to my allocation question. Like, even if I grant that there's going to be, and I think it's perfectly reasonable to say that there will be some activities that occur at the National Convention that you know, are reasonably closely connected to the Congresswoman's reelection campaign and her status as a candidate. It seems to me there's probably going to be a lot of things that are not, either that are, you know, purely social or which are directed generally at the Democratic Party as opposed to her particular candidacy. What's your view of how one would break that down? Or is the request basically, no, we want 100% pay for expenses incurred irrespective of attendance at the convention, irrespective of whether those activities are directly tied to her candidacy?
I think that's a good question. I do want to remind the commission that we are only asking to use these funds when there are gaps in care, right? So her mother has continuous care, and if all goes well, we don't need to use campaign funds at all. So the reason we're trying to get as broad as possible is because there could be, so you attend the convention and all is fine until the last evening, and you can't get home in time to be the one who care gives. Can we use campaign funds? So I recognize wanting to have some kind of bright line rules here, but definitely, you know, what we're not saying is if she does all of these activities, 100% of her mother's care is being paid for by campaign funds. We're only doing when someone doesn't show up for their shift or, you know, the worker gets ill, that sort of thing. But to your point, it's not clear, right? It's not specifically bright line because campaigns, they morph. We do all sorts of things when we're running for office to ensure that we're going to get reelected or help other people get reelected. And so it's hard to say these are all the scenarios in which we're going to do it. We tried to do the best that we could in there. I recognize that at Mate Night, you know, that bright line would be really nice. And sometimes it's just in making this request as realistic as possible, we wanted to kind of explain all of the scenarios we thought it might come up. And then it may not end up coming up in many of these as well. Again, recognizing too that other people will be reading it. So we need to have some sort of clear guidance. I don't know if I can give it to you.
No, I appreciate that. Just to respond to that. One, you know, the actual category of expenses, you know, the caring for her mother versus caring for a child, I'm completely untroubled by that. So that's not, I think, for me at least, the legal issue here. For me, the legal issue, and I voted this way previously, is that, you know, to the extent the statute talks about expenses irrespective of one's candidacy, I think that distinction between, I mean, to use your words, getting yourself elected versus helping get other people elected is a legal distinction. And so, you know, the answer to that question is, in my view, going to be material to how you would end up being able to pay for it.
Commissioner Lindenbaum.
Thank you. I will say off the bat that I am struggling with this one. I think some of my colleagues may be as well. And it's for a few reasons. It is not because of any differences between childcare and, you know, dependent care. Although at least there are some, you know, factual differences that may come up for people that are not your client, because with your client, she is her legal guardian, right? There's a different issue that could come into play if somebody is not someone's legal guardian, but I recognize, again, that's not the facts here. This is an advisory opinion. It's based on the facts in front of us. I wasn't here when many of these, you know, advisory opinions were issued on childcare and, you know, we can just say care. And the reasoning behind this and this irrespective test that we have really put into place here. But I struggle with, is that too broad of a way to look at this, especially when, you know, the way this started was with a candidate, not a sitting member. You know, a sitting member has a salary that they get while they're campaigning. They don't have to quit their job to campaign like most, you know, candidates do. So they have the salary, they have their, you know, members' representative allowance to also dip into for many of their costs when other people don't. And I'm trying to understand, I understand the legal side of it, but on a policy side of it, why does it make sense for us to, you know, absolutely okay this and say that yes, campaign funds can be used here?
I think that's a good question. And I think as we're seeing Congress change and the world change in terms of how things are happening, we have, you know, in Congresswoman Berrigan's case, she doesn't have a spouse who also can kind of pick up that that slack. And, you know, we're seeing, you know, the members of Congress getting elected to, you know, look different, right? They've got young kids, as we've talked about, with childcare, with unique circumstances. They have to file. And in case of many of my clients, they've got to fly back and forth all the way to California, right? So that's a significant time period in which you can't get back necessarily to, you know, do the caring or that sort of thing. And we're seeing this change, especially if you're getting younger members of Congress who may be part of a sandwich generation or that, you know, have responsibilities for parents or kids or things. And it makes it, you know, having those, you know, campaign funds that were, you know, raised for that purpose and given by their supporters, you know, to assist with that. You know, I think as a policy matter, it helps to support those folks who are running and being able to keep their seats.
Mr. Chairman. Yeah. So, you know, again, I understand that. And that may be a reason to raise the salary for members, but I'm trying to understand, you know, we're not giving tax advice, of course. And, you know, even if we approve this, I can't tell you whether or not your client should be paying taxes on any money that comes in here and that she uses on the elder care. But assuming this is, you know, non-taxed money, why is that something that you think should happen here, where we can use this campaign funds for somebody who already receives the salary?
I mean, I think that's, you know, the case for, you know, many of the things that the FEC takes up in terms of particular travel or childcare expenses, like we mentioned before, you know, where if it's determined that it's not personal use, that it's, you know, that it's an okay use of campaign funds. And, you know, I mean, I suppose that could be said for, you know, other things that happen. We know that I know the commission is taking up, you know, spending campaign funds on security, right? And that may relate, you know, to running for office or not running for office, and they get a salary, they could pay for security, you know, with their salary, right? So I think we do have to, as you were saying, as a policy matter, you know, make some determinations here. And you know, I don't envy you in doing it, and I understand. But I also feel really, what's really tough for my client in this particular situation is she's established making sure that her mother's taken care of, you know, using programs that are already available, and she's used her own funds in the past and her own ability to do the caregiving too. And it's gotten to the point where there's just gaps that she cannot cover because of her status as a candidate and an office holder. Hence the reason, you know, I think it makes a decent case that she should be able to use it that way.
Mr. Chairman, it's unfortunate since so many of us are in that situation, not because we're candidates or office holders, but because we have child care responsibilities, elder care responsibilities, and we're actually not in a position to change the system such as it exists. So back to more of the legal side of it, one of the challenges I'm also thinking through is, what is a member's duty? And should we, if we okay this, should we set limitations on what somebody's duty is as an office holder? Is it just, you know, the couple hours that they may vote, right? When they're in town, they're spending very little time voting, right? Is it also the time that they spend fundraising for others, which while may not be their actual office holder duty, it helps them climb the leadership ladder. Is this something that you think we should leave up to the candidate office holders to make that determination themselves? And then they are therefore responsible to, you know, their voters and their donors on how they spend that money? What's the best way to do this?
Yeah, I think that's something we, you know, in this field deal with all the time, right? To an extent, you can make a bright line rule so that everyone can say that is okay and that is not, makes it easier to ensure folks are filing, you know, following the rules. And if not, it's fairly easy to see, you know, that you can open an enforcement action, for instance, or investigate. On the other hand, while I was going through this process with the staff, who is amazing, by the way, it was tough to be able to make sure we were covering all the bases and ensuring that we came up with the scenarios that were like, these are the specifics where we are going to need that gap in care and, you know, to do the best we can and to know there's going to be unique situations. So, you know, either of these, you know, drafts, you know, if other people, it's pretty specific. So knowing that, you know, you may take up regulations in that sense may be the most helpful way of going through and coming up with those specifics and getting input from the public in that case for other scenarios other than this specific one, which is pretty factually specific.
Final thing, and thank you for that again. And thank you for this, in this advisory opinion request, you are giving us a lot of factual details here that help us, you know, or at least help me here maybe be able to say yes, but on these facts and the fact that this is for gaps in care, not the regular care that exists. And to the extent I approve this, it will be for those purposes. And I'll pass it on to my colleagues.
Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you to the requester, because I think you are, thank you for the question. I think it is a difficult question for us, but you are providing us with an opportunity here to provide some clarity on a point on which I think we all agree. And that is that, you know, it happens that all of the previous questions that came in concerned childcare, but I think that we are probably unanimous in agreeing that whatever we have said about the payment of childcare expenses in the past applies equally to other caregiving responsibilities, such as elder care or caring for a disabled relative. And I really feel this request because I've been in all three of those buckets personally, and I know that all of us have lived experience that reflects some of these same concerns of needing to be there for someone who depends on you and trying to, you know, balance that with other responsibilities. So I found this request really spoke to me, I have to say. And as I said, I think that to the extent, I'm not exactly sure where everybody's going to come down, but I think there is one principle that we all agree on, and that is that whatever we have said about the payment of childcare expenses applies equally to other dependent care expenses. And I think I appreciate the opportunity for us to make that clear. You know, the personal use statute is interestingly worded. It has what we call the irrespective test. That the payment has to be, I'm looking for the exact words of the statute, a contribution or donation shall be considered to be converted to personal use if the contribution or amount is used to fulfill any commitment, obligation, or expense of a person that would exist irrespective of the candidate's election campaign or individual's duties as a holder of federal office. And it has been suggested in the past that having to pay rent in Washington is something that a person only has to do because they're a member of Congress. Having to buy nice clothes to wear on the House floor is an expense that they would, you know, otherwise they'd be at home wearing their sweatpants, so they wouldn't need to buy that expensive clothing. But Congress was pretty clear when it passed this law that those kinds of expenses, even though the argument could be made that it's irrespective, that wasn't what they meant. So I think there are many places where there are many requests we've received where I thought it was pretty easy to figure out whether it was personal use or not, whether it met the irrespective test. But I think this one really is a challenge. And that's why, and I appreciate my colleagues allowing us to add something to the agenda at the last minute. That's why I think this topic really would be well addressed in a rulemaking. The advisory opinion context allows you to get a shield from enforcement action. It doesn't, if we are unable to answer some of your questions, that's not a no, it's not a yes. It just means you're kind of operating at your own risk. We're not predicting how it's going to turn out should somebody file a complaint. And I think on the answer to question one, we are all in agreement, and at the appropriate time, I would be happy to move approval of the answer to that. I'm not sure sitting here today that I feel comfortable with either draft, with the answers to the other questions. I think one may be too broad for me and the other may be too narrow for me. And even though it is based on your specific facts, I worry that draft A could open the door to members using campaign funds just to pay for their normal dependent care expenses, just because of the way that it is worded. And I don't think that's what the statute contemplates, and that's not a place that I'm ready to go to. But I think it would really benefit from public comment, from interacting with the public on the various distinctions between what candidates are doing and what office holders are doing and what officers are doing in their candidate capacity. I think you're right that some of these questions reflect a new dynamic in Congress, but in some ways it's an issue that the commission has been dealing with for a long time. Back in the 1990s, the commission first started to get requests from members of Congress who wanted to use campaign funds for childcare expenses. And it's actually only more recently that we got requests specifically from non-incumbent candidates. And I think that the advisory opinions that we granted to those non-incumbent candidates set important precedents that I wouldn't want the fact that I'm interested in doing a rulemaking to negate that I'm considering revisiting those. I think those were rightly decided. But I think that some of the questions that you have posed really do extend what the commission has said before. And you're perfectly entitled to ask. That's why you asked the question, because we haven't answered it before. But I think this really goes beyond where the commission has been comfortable in the past. That's a very long-winded way of saying that I think that the answer to question one is pretty similar in both drafts, and I'm comfortable with that. But I'm just not comfortable today answering the other questions. I don't think either drafts hits it quite right for me, and I think we really should do a rulemaking on this because you raise important and interesting questions.
Thank you. Commissioner Dickerson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First let me finish my questioning and then I have a couple points. So I finished with question one, and I hate to disappoint the vice chair, but as I pointed out, I think I could grant question one as limited to the Congresswoman's own campaign, but that doesn't sound like the request. So I'm in the difficult position of either having to write a narrower understanding of the first question or saying no, which is awkward. But let me ask you about question two, which it seems to me falls on the question of what official capacity or official business is. I'm wondering if you could give me either a back of the envelope definition or a set of examples, something to give me a sense of what you mean by official capacity, because I know you're aware of the Swalwell advisory opinion, and you know that was a central question that arose there.
Yeah, it's something we talked about a lot when trying to come up with the best way of asking the questions. There are just certain things. So as one of our specifics is as chair of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus, right? So you can't be chair of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus if you're not a member of Congress, right? So we, while the caucus itself is not official duties, we, you know, have said that it's in connection with. But you're right, and that's part of why we're asking the question, not only because, you know, the dependent care hasn't been addressed, but because it's hard to know exactly. I mean, if you ask members of Congress, they'd be like, well, you know, if I'm invited on a CODEL, it's because, you know, I'm a member of Congress. If I'm chair of a caucus, it's because I'm a member of Congress, right? Or to attend an event with in their official capacity in a ceremonial role, for instance, because they're a member of Congress, they would not get those invitations being, you know, a citizen from Los Angeles. But I understand your perspective in that it's hard to specifically narrow that down. And I sense some discomfort in allowing the member of Congress or the federal official to make that determination. I'm not sure I have a perfect definition for you.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Well, then let me just make a couple observations. One is I think the challenge on this concept of official duty is, you know, the word duty. I mean, the Constitution gives the Congress plenary authority to set its rules and elect its officers, and I have no interest in probing too deeply into those questions, which I think are, you know, not mine to consider. But the statute does use the word duty, and duties and opportunities are different things.
Sure.
And I think part of what's making me uncomfortable here is that the fact that one gets additional opportunities in life as a member of Congress, gets invited to things to which one would not otherwise get invited. I'm told embassy balls are nice. I don't rate highly enough to get invited, but I've heard this. I'm not sure I would consider that a duty of the office, as distinct from saying casting votes or, you know, sort of fact-finding missions, which are contemplated by our regulations, you know, things that are within the four corners of the role of being an office holder. And kind of similarly, and going back to my points on the first, you know, the first question presented, it's not clear to me that rising through the ranks of the party in the House is a duty of the office. That may be an opportunity of the office or something adjacent to the office, or, you know, I certainly think it could encompass campaigning, although we're back to my point about you might have to figure out whose campaign needs to pay for that. And it may be that the leadership pack or the party committee or someone else has to take responsibility for the fundraising done on its own behalf rather than the congresswoman's own reelection campaign. So, I mean, I guess my overall point is, and I don't think this is in any way yours or your client's fault, this is a result of lack of clarity from the commission going back several decades, where we haven't been careful about applying the statutory language in a way that I think is intended to be narrow. So all those points made, you know, turning to the vice chair's proposal, you know, Commissioner Broussard and I had a statement in the Swalwell matter. I think I find this less obscure than maybe my colleagues do. You know, the irrespective test has the advantage of not turning in any way on the personal, you know, situation of the requester. Commissioner Broussard in my statement said, yeah, this has nothing to do with whether you have a spouse who can fill in for you. This has nothing to do with the specifics of what your personal life looked like. This has to do with, you know, whether that would have existed irrespective of these duties or this situation as a candidate. So while I'm sympathetic to the need for a rule of general application, I want to focus on this particular request. And I guess my question to counsel is, there are portions of this that I would be very happy to vote for and which I support, but it is important to me, and I think it's compelled by law, that the advisory opinion be limited to the reelection campaign of your client and not to general political activities for the party generally defined, and that the understanding of official action be like duties, not just, you know, things that come to you from the ether because of your privileged status as a holder of high office. So I would be happy if you were willing to give me the time to write a draft that I could vote for. But in light of this conversation, I don't think I have that draft in front of me. So my question to you, which I know you are accustomed to from your time here, is whether I may have an extension until the next open meeting of the commission to write that draft, or if you would prefer to take the vote today. Because I also recognize that under the statute, you're entitled to an answer today.
Yes. I'd obviously want to run it by my client to make sure, but I think that, getting an answer as opposed to a non-answer or something that can't be agreed on is probably best. So I need to get permission, but I imagine that she would agree.
Colleagues, anything else? We are then in a position, what is our deadline as it stands at the moment?
Thank you, Chairman. Our deadline's tomorrow.
Okay, so what I would suggest, Ms. Olson, is if it's, well, you don't control your client, but you could let us know by the end of today, even if the answer is I don't have an answer yet, such that we are in a position where if we need to do something on Pally very quickly tomorrow, if you say my client is so completely unavailable, I do not have permission to grant an extension, that would be helpful to know by the end of the day today, such that we know, okay, well, then we need to vote on what's in front of us tomorrow and do that. And is that I'm seeing policy, maybe doesn't love it, but maybe can live with that kind of scenario tomorrow, and I'll be available to sign anything to make official if that's the case. Okay. So we're going to then hold this over pending, and we will either be holding this over to the next open meeting or we'll be resolving this offline. So thank you very much, Ms. Olson, for all your time and for answering all of our questions. And we will follow up with you on that.